This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
TikTok is pulling sponsorships for several Canadian art institutions as it prepares to shut down operations in this country. So it will no longer support the Juno Awards and the Toronto International Film Festival as it prepares to comply with a federal order to shut down. The company is still challenging that court order. In the United States, TikTok is reportedly working on a new version of its app ahead of a major sale to a group of American investors. The change would potentially sever the app's connection to China by using a different algorithm.
TikTok's decision to pull support for multiple Canadian cultural organizations and events in light of the federal government's decision to ban the company from operating in the country has attracted increasing attention, as many wonder about a policy with few, if any, discernible benefits. Putting the spotlight on TikTok makes sense, but it risks missing the bigger picture, which involves a steady stream of funding cancellations in response to Canadian digital cultural policy. Netflix, Meta, Spotify, and others have all had their own announcements, with millions lost due largely to Canadian policy. Has Canada killed the proverbial goose that laid the golden egg on cultural support? Scott Benzie is the executive director of Digital First Canada and CEO of the Buffer Festival. He's seen the impact firsthand, and he returns to the podcast to discuss what's been happening, identify why, and sort through the impact. Scott, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me again, Michael.
Yeah, really glad you're back. So the origins of this particular episode trace back to a tweet thread of yours just from a few days ago. And I thought it's worthwhile just reading it out because it really, I think, coalesces a lot of what's taking place and then what we're going to discuss here today. So
sure. You wrote,
among other things, I work a lot in Canadian media events. I work a lot on funding Canadian content. Netflix is essentially out. TikTok is out. Meta is out. Prime, Disney, etc. out. All as a direct result of the Canadian government and how they went about negotiating with them. Content is a global game now, and foreign companies are interested in doing business in Canada, but not at any cost. Heavy lobbying by entrenched groups fighting for relevance has literally bitten off the hand that will feed them in the future. An own goal of epic proportions will hurt in the end, the taxpayer forced to subsidize culture approved by government bodies, and the excellent creatives here that could be thriving globally. End result, of course, is everyone leaves because it doesn't matter where you are anymore. Now, I thought that was a great wake-up call for what in some ways has been hiding in plain sight. As we're going to talk about, there have been lots of announcements, but it's when you put all of this together, sort of the drip, drip, drip of all of them, suddenly you find yourself, I think, in what is a pretty bad position, as you articulated. So I want to do a few things with the discussion, chronicle what's been happening, identify the why, and then notably sort through what the impact has been. Why don't we start with TikTok? It's one of the areas that's a core concern for you, given the focus on digital creators, and of course is the company that's attracted the most amount of attention, especially over the last number of weeks. Can you remind everyone what TikTok has announced and why?
Yeah, sure. So TikTok, I mean, the most recent announcement that drove some of the news is they announced pulling of all their funding for the culture programs that they have funded in Canada, including, you know, the Junos and TIFF. Full disclosure, Buffer Festival, Digital First Canada would also be included in that. And they announced that, you know, rightfully, they're going to be pulling those fundings as the government orders them to leave the country. I should articulate it. It's not TikTok pulling the funding. The government is mandating that they leave. And part of them leaving is, you know, them taking all their operations with them. Those operations include sponsorship execution for all these events. It doesn't just include that. It obviously includes over 300 people here in Canada, includes all the creator support, it includes all the creator programs. And this is a direct result of the government's orders not to ban the app, but to force the company to not operate in Canada. And I know it's been exhausted, but this is the dumbest decision that the government could possibly come up with. One of the biggest complaints that digital creators have about TikTok is that there is no TikTok monetization program here in Canada for creators. Not available to them, is available in the States and some other markets. There's an opportunity here for a win, for the government to go negotiate with TikTok, get a win, tell them what you want, make some demands. But they're not even coming to the table. So it's just, you know, the last thing in what is now a long line of digital policy, culture policy, for lack of a better term, failures over the last 2.5 years. And when I wrote that Twitter thread, it was, you know, I really like memes. So I started meme first and kind of worked backwards and realized that this stuff has been happening for 2.5 years. Nobody has said anything, like, to bring it all together. And I think that's because the loudest people in the room normally are these cultural organizations that put up the biggest fight, and they're just silent because they feel this is a way for them to recoup some money at the end of the day, but they're not realizing what's happening. These companies are leaving. Canada is important to them, but not big enough and not important enough for them to do it at any cost, like I said. Sorry for the ramble.
No, I think it's really helpful to provide that additional context. It actually does remind me that, you know, we talked on an earlier episode about the role that TikTok in Canada plays directly with the digital creators and the benefits that come from that. Can you articulate that a little bit? Because there has been a lot of talk, as you know, about the loss of funding for the Junos and for TIFF and for Indigenous creators, and as you indicate, for the Buffer Festival as well. But I think you've tried to make the point that it isn't even just that funding. It is also some of the support. What does that support look like when it comes to digital creators in Canada?
Yeah, so TikTok does a wonderful job of supporting their creators in Canada the best they can. And I will say, you know, the team at TikTok Canada, they're on the proverbial our side here. Like, when they go and talk to the government, they are internal advocates for Canadians and for Canadian policy and for the Canadian government. They're seen as adversaries, and they're not. So, you know, with their policy people who do a great job coming to the table and talking to our government, you know, we saw through Bill C-11, TikTok was there. They pulled up a chair at the table and said, let's have it. What are your questions? What can we do? How can we work with you? The removal of the offices will remove that while keeping any security concerns of the app in place. TikTok has an excellent small business program where they support small businesses using TikTok to generate revenue. You know, probably our best success story here in Canada is a guy named Corey McMullen, who's an appliance salesman out of Smith Falls, Ontario, who used TikTok to build this incredible business where people travel around the world to come see him and buy appliances from him. And TikTok has programs to support these people in small business. They have their Indigenous Accelerator. Each, you know, I won't say each creator, but a lot of creators who use TikTok as a business have direct account managers that provide them sponsorships. There's TikTok Shop. That's one of the big things that I think will go away that nobody's talking about, is the access to TikTok Shop. So it's the availability for, you know, TikTokers to get sponsorship deals, sell their own stuff online. That's all going to go away. And I think the biggest challenge in all of this is when we ask why, the answer is, oh, top secret security, China, we can't tell you. And that's, you know, it seems like a TikTok specific policy. There's no talk about the other apps from other jurisdictions that sit open, way worse privacy than TikTok has. And it's, I don't understand it.
Okay. No, I don't think you're alone in that regard. And some of the frustration has been a bit of a lack of information around TikTok. Now, it's been getting the attention so far, and part of that is clearly an effort by the company to drum up attention and see if the government might be willing to course correct a little bit. But it's hardly alone. And I think that was really part of the point of the tweet thread that you had. Last year, Netflix announced something similar. Can you talk a bit about what they announced now, almost a year ago?
Yeah, so Netflix announced, you know, in wake of the 5% of Canadian revenues. And I do want to say, because that 5% of Canadian revenues that the CRTC is imposing is bandied around. And people are like, of Canadian revenues, I should say. And people are saying, that's 5%. Who cares? That's, you know, such a small number. It's 5% of revenue, not 5% of profit. And people imagine these companies working on these giant margins and being so rich. 5% of revenue is a real number. It's a real number with real impact to how they operate in Canada. So Netflix said, well, okay, you're going to require us to spend all this money in Canada on things that you want us to spend it on, which means all the programs that we support of our own volition, we need to put a pause on while we figure this out. And that included, their Indigenous program, a bunch of the Imaginative Conference, a bunch of other conferences. Now, to Netflix's credit, they did keep running a bunch of programs that they had contracts in place for, but they pulled all the discretionary support and funding for these arts organizations that do real and important jobs for people. They open doors, they provide business value, not just for the industry, but also for fans and people watching. So Netflix, rightfully said, okay, well, while we're going through this process, we're going to pause all these investments because we don't know what you're going to tell us we can do with our money.
Okay. And in fact, I think it is worth noting that that 5% was the CRTC's base contribution,
Correct.
and upcoming will be a decision sometime over the next few months, or certainly by the end of the year, that will highlight what the additional contributions or mandated contributions might be. They could be some of the discoverability stuff that we've talked about in the past. It could be marketing. It could be other funding. We had some groups talk about another 25% of revenues as being the contribution. And that's where things might shake out into some of these other activities. So it might be that, I suppose, some of those sponsorships could count, but at least for the moment, Netflix just doesn't know.
Yeah, and if you listen to the hearings, which I don't recommend many people do because they can be incredibly boring, but if you listen to the hearings and what some of the organizations are saying, I don't know that that's true. I mean, they're asking for this money to essentially go directly into their coffers. There's not, there's this broad conversation about Canadian culture being critical and, Canadian storytelling by Canadians. And I couldn't agree more with that sentiment, but that's not what they're actually saying. They're actually saying is our funding is drying up because of X. You need to force these people to fund us. So if the CRTC, from hearing from these organizations, if the CRTC is going to take the position that, these companies that are suffering, we need to subsidize. So Netflix, you have to put your money here. One of two things is going to happen. Netflix is going to do it, and they're not going to spend any more money anywhere else, or they're going to leave. And that's something that, people, oh, scare tactic, they're going to leave. Oh, they're not actually going to leave. Canada's too important. They can still operate and sell services to Canadians without being here. And that's a real risk. We saw TikTok's going to leave Canada. And Canadians are still going to have access to the app. Canadians are still going to operate, but they won't have any support and we won't have any money. There's no reason to think that other global companies will not operate the same way,
Okay.
depending on what that price tag is. And sorry, like if you look at Netflix, how many billions of dollars do they pump into the system by producing content here in Canada? Like it's a real number. And just as an industry, we've looked at it and said, ah, villains, pay us. And if that's going to be the modus operandi of the CRTC and legacy media, we're all like, we've bitten off the hand that's going to feed us. They are going to leave. And we've all said it in hearings. We've all said it in conversations. They've said it. And we as a country, for some reason, are going, eh, do you really mean it? They really mean it.
Yeah. Now, speaking of companies that really meant it, Meta, of course, comes to mind because this isn't just about film and TV. This touches on other areas as well. While the focus with Meta and the Online News Act was the end of linking to news, the sponsorship side and some of the funding and agreements that they had got a little bit less attention. Can you just refresh on some of the impact there as well? Because there is a thread here that cuts across not just Bill C-11 and not just this policy on TikTok, but other areas as well, including news.
Yeah, so I think when you look at the Meta decision, it's a really interesting one because you, me, and a bunch of people included, Meta said, if you do this here in Canada, this is what we are going to do. We are going to ban news. And when people hear ban news, they think, oh, okay, so I can't get my news on Facebook or Instagram. That has a direct result, and that has a direct impact on the creators and the people that use Facebook and Instagram to do their business. It's not just the blocking of Globe and Mail. It creates this level of uncertainty into what you're posting. Like, are you sharing news? Can you share news? It has a lot of knock-on effects. And before I get into, what Meta is actually doing, The problem is, Meta told the Canadian government, this is what we're going to do. And the Canadian government said, nah, I don't think you will. Experts in the field came forward and said, if you do this, this is what Meta is going to do. A lot of these foreign streamers and companies, they see Canada as a test bed, right? Because we're close to the US. We are very similar to Europe in a lot of our cultural legislation. So when Canada starts to do something, but similar in Australia, all of these companies look and go, this is going to be the linchpin. This is going to be the test bed. If we give in to what Canada wants, that's going to happen everywhere else. So they dug in on Canada, and they have dug in on Canada. So Meta bans news. Meta historically has not had the greatest support specifically for their Canadian creators. So if you are an Instagrammer and want to talk to Instagram in Canada, you can't do it. There's no local office to really talk to a direct Instagram rep. There had been talk about them bringing that kind of infrastructure into Canada. And then once Bill C-11 started, it just disappeared. You know, they have a sales organization here, but there's no direct creator support. If you look around, you know, Meta isn't seen at any industry events. But it's another example of the government could have taken a win. You could have forced Meta to invest X number of dollars, told them what it is, and let them spend it on sponsorships or supporting culture groups or whatever it is, and they probably would have done it. But they didn't do that. They drew a hard line. They called Meta's, well, I guess, did they call Meta's bluff or did Meta call their bluff? I don't really know. But in the end, everybody lost. And now just kind of like nobody talks about it. But it was the first domino to fall on this, what is turning Canada into an innovation backwater country. And I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, no, it's, I know, source of frustration for a lot of people. There's at least one other company that I'd want to highlight because it sort of bridges between the instances where we've got the Netflixes and TikToks, which have gone ahead and canceled, and Meta, which, you know, talked about it and then went ahead with it. Then there's also Spotify, which of course the most popular on the music side. What did it tell the CRTC directly in the wake of Bill C-11? So it too had a response. We're waiting to see how it plays out, but it too responded to the prospect of that legislation.
Yeah, so I think Spotify's position is clear, and everybody knows they operate on very small margins. This is public information. And the insistence of a percentage of revenue in the Canadian market will essentially kill any support for Canadian creators here in Canada. It might, you know, Spotify will have to take a position of whether or not it affects their distribution and their discovery because they literally can't afford to pay Canadian artists over other artists. And Spotify came right out and said, you know, if you regulate us like radio, we will not be able to operate at this capacity in Canada. You know, and there's this weird misconception that happens with music, and it drives me a little bit crazy. It's not my bag, but you know, everybody thinks that artists are getting screwed by Spotify. They're not getting the same revenue that they would on radio play. And while that's true, Spotify gives them a global audience. So we're talking about, you know, scale here that we've never seen before for audio distribution. And it's allowed other artists to come up through the ranks and be discovered. So while the pop might not seem as big to a certain creator who got certain radio play because of CanCon regulations here in Canada, there are other creators who are thriving globally on Spotify that we're willing to throw up, well, theoretically, we're willing to throw under the bus. Again, to placate legacy models that just don't work anymore. The Canadian culture model is focused on getting Canadian content to Canadians. There are ways to do that, but we're not doing that, and it doesn't matter anymore. This is the thing that that I don't know that the industry gets. Canadians to Canadians is irrelevant to most Canadians, artists and creators, the bulk of them. There's just not enough people here when you consider a global audience and a global market. So you know, all of this takes a different type of thinking that I thought would come to the table and I thought would be brought out. But when you listen to these CRTC he hearings, it's we need to take these people and put them into our model because we're suffering.
Yeah, no, that certainly was a recurring theme. You know, those are some of the public examples, but you're, you know, deeply enmeshed and involved in the industry. Can you talk a bit about what else you are hearing? There are obviously some other players out there as well. Is this a consistent theme, even if not publicly announced yet, but some of the same kinds of concerns popping up elsewhere?
Yeah, so, two things. We didn't talk about Disney Plus, and I think it's worth pointing out that they paused all commissions of Canadian content in the wake of C-11. Now, that one I find really interesting because it's, Disney, Netflix, Prime, Tubi, you name the people who are finding success. They are not seeing Canada as a place to do business. Our culture minister is nowhere to be found. I don't know where, when has Guibo even said anything about culture or this file or C-11 or TikTok? I don't think he said anything. I think they should be working a lot closer with innovation and industry and Melanie Joly's camp, but they're not saying anything or doing anything either. So, it's almost like nobody wants to see this giant problem looming on our right. And what it's not just this funding coming out, it's creating a feeling in foreign companies, not just streamers and not just tech companies, that Canada is not a place to do business. So anecdotally, I mean, I run a bunch of events. I look for funding in the private sector for most of what we do. We get very, I can say confidently say very little public money support, public purse support. So I have to go to the private sector. And we have heard more than 10 times, Scott, love you, can't do it right now. We got to figure out what's going on with the Broadcast Act, with the digital services tax. We don't know if we can open a Canadian office because of XYZ. And what's frustrating to me is they're right. Like, there's no convincing them that, Canada is a great place to do business right now for these tech companies. So in the end, all of this has done is everybody suffers. Canada has found a really unique way to remove all leverage they have, not use that leverage to increase funding for arts programs and the people who want it, and not support the legacy media that is struggling and drive out innovation. Like, if you wrote this down at the beginning of the process, like, this is what the Canadian policy is going to do, you never would have imagined it. Even in the worst case scenario that I imagined, I did not imagine this.
That's a pretty dire take on what's been happening, and highlights where some of the impact is, right down to even your organization and some of the events that you put on. Now, to play devil's advocate for a moment, it does strike me that some will take a look at some of these companies and say, you know what, they were never sincere to begin with. To the extent to which they were willing to go ahead and put forward some of these sponsorships, that was largely there to try to placate policymakers and politicians. Once that was unsuccessful, they pulled the money away. So it was essentially just a bargaining chip when it came to policy. How would you respond to sort of that perspective?
So from personal experience, I don't think that's how TikTok operated in the market or the world that I exist in. I found that company very eager and willing to engage on things that we have not made public. Like, we talk, for example, our Road to Freedom program, where we go into Indigenous communities and train them on how to be digital creators and leave them with a bunch of gear. We don't even talk about that. Yeah, I don't think it's ever been mentioned in committee other than me from TikTok. So, I don't. I'm not as cynical about that, but let's assume it's true. Let's assume that, all of these companies were doing all these things in market as leverage. Yes, thank you. That's how the world works. That's how these things get done. It gets done in traditional media too. We're not some kind of unique snowflake. We should have leaned into that leverage and asked for more. Secure it for longer terms. Like, don't let them off the hook. Okay, great. You're spending all this money. Will you sign a 5-year deal with us and increase that spend by XYZ over that time? But we're not even having those conversations. It's there's there seems to be this, I don't know. I don't know if it's just Canadians like that we're protective over our own little bubble, but there seems to be this animosity towards the foreign streamers that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't care why they're pumping money into the system. I want them to pump more money into the system. I want us to use that leverage to get more. And just saying, oh, well, the money's gone away because they didn't get what they want. Yeah, That's how the world works. That's how private companies work. But we should use the leverage that we do have, because Canada is an important market, to just get more. But nobody seems to want to win here, and it's frustrating.
Okay. Now, do you think that there is the prospect, or how, I suppose, can we put the toothpaste back in the tube? We're beneficiaries, whether for personal political gain for those companies, or because they saw that as part of their broader mandate, or part of the way that they achieve success in contributing, whether it's to fund productions or to sponsor all kinds of different kinds of things. How do we put the toothpaste back in the tube and get this back on track, in your view?
Yeah, so I will say, just going back a step, I think from the traditional standpoint, like the Netflixes and the Primes and the Disney, who produced a lot of content here, when we're not talking about direct arts organization funding, they did business here because of the tax credit incentive system, and that we have really good crews and we have really talented people. And that world has created a multi-bajillion dollar industry here in Canada. We have managed to disrupt it for some reason. So I don't think that they're being altruistic, pumping that money into the space there. It's because we're really good at what we do, and a policy that has allowed it. I guess it was probably 20 years ago now. I don't know, 15, 10 years ago. Melanie Joly, then culture minister, announced this much ballyhooed deal with Netflix. So, this isn't new. Them bargaining isn't new. Them doing this isn't new. So I don't know why everybody's surprised or cynical about it. It's just how the world works. Now, back to how do we put the toothpaste back into the tube? Yeah, we can. I mean, I think two things have to happen. What happens in the US around TikTok will be critical to, I think, what happens here. There's a world where, the rumors are now that TikTok is going to create a US-only app, for the US, with all the data securities and check marks that they want. There's no reason that, if that happens and the US are placated, Canada needs to tell our population something, TikTok specifically, like why they're removing this company from operating here. Because now we're going to have a different app than the US, and that has a direct, like, that will kill Canadian creators in Canada, because we need to do business with the US market. A deal for a TikToker with Best Buy Canada is significantly smaller than a deal with Best Buy US. So something will have to change there. Broader, we need a complete shift in how we look at, I don't even want to use the word broadcast, because the fact that it's called a broadcast bill just points to how backwards we're looking at this thing. We need a whole shift in the way we approach the global content game. And without that shift, I don't think we can put the toothpaste back in the tube. We need to stop seeing these streamers as adversaries and start seeing them as tools to expose Canadian culture to the world. And until we do that, I think we're cooked. There was a story out of the CBC when Schitt's Creek got really popular that I think Catherine Tate said, Netflix are colonizers. Like, they're colonizing our country. That is the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life. They have been the greatest partner for traditional TV in exposing Canadian content in history, and it's not close. So until Canada gets out of a mindset of Canadian content to Canadians, we'll never come up with a regime that works globally. And if we don't come up with a regime that works globally, we're dead.
I'd like to close with this. You've been an important voice, certainly on C11 and some of the digital policy that we've seen. Obviously, it hasn't unfolded in the way that you'd hoped for. Do you have any thoughts or reflections on this recent era of digital policy, and how government has both approached it and then also approached some of those emerging and newer voices when it comes to its development?
Yeah, you want to make me mad. We started this at the tail end of C10, when the government at the last minute decided to include the internet in Bill C10, and not tell anybody. And we just kind of put our hand up and said, whoa, 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 this is bad. Obviously, the conservatives used us to filibuster that bill, died on the order paper. And then the C11 debacle is well documented. I mean, creators were not treated with the respect that they deserve inside Heritage. They were not treated with the respect that they deserve in the Senate. I shouldn't say from everybody, but I'm going to get to that part in a second. They are Canada's greatest cultural export. Digital creators are literally Canada's greatest cultural export, and it's not close. People get mad when I say that, but it's an empirical fact. We didn't get what we wanted, which was one tiny clause out of the bill out. We did get a very nice note from the minister at the time saying, you know, instructing the CRTC not to do anything to the detriment of digital creators and to support them. I haven't seen, you know, to the CRTC's credit, they don't look like they're going to go down that road. But we'll see. You know, a new minister can just issue a new order sometime. But I don't think that there has been enough, you know, outside of the work you're doing and some others, there's been enough eyeballs on what's happened in the whole. Like, you can take the digital creators issue, you can take the Netflix and the Prime and the audio issues and Spotify, but nobody's looked at and the digital services tax. Nobody's looked at what we're doing as a whole and said, where's the win? Point me to the last cultural digital win that we've had in the last 15 years. Somebody point it out to me. Copyright, maybe. When was that done? 15 years ago? 12 mm-hmm. years ago? I'm not entirely sure. But what it has been really frustrating for me personally is, you know, we came to the table during C10 and C11, and, you know, we brought honesty and truth to our issues to the table. We had some support from some MPs and some parties, not so much from others. It was clearly very political, I think, even in my own personal experience, which is also well documented, the way things happened that I wasn't so sure of. I just assumed people were working with the best intentions, and they're not. But now those people that supported us through all that and talked about how important digital creator voices were and how they're the future and were supportive of us are also silent now. You know, there's no political win for them, or there's no political expediency. So, you know, I don't see any support from them. I don't see anybody coming out who said digital creators are the future of Canadian content, you know, coming out and saying, hey, maybe we should have a look at this. And that's frustrating. And I think it goes to how, I guess, politics operate. You know, if there's not a political mean to an end, then, you know, maybe we don't stick our hand up at this certain time and we'll make it up to them later. I find that frustrating and disappointing, and it doesn't make me want to engage much.
You know, Scott, thanks so much both for all that you've been doing on these issues and for taking the time to join me on the podcast.
Always a pleasure, Michael. Thank you too.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod, or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.